Lift your head, weary sinner. The river's just a And we're back. It's another week. This is Andrew Wood, Executive Director of Hope Resource Center, and making the producer a little bit nervous today as I roll in at about 5:02 and we go on air at 5:04. But I'm here. I had a late meeting and glad to be here. We're ready for the day. What we're going to do today is what we do every single week. We're going to talk about life. We're going to talk about why we should cherish it, and we're also going to talk about what that means, the different things going on in the country and around the world, and what that means for those that stand for life. So I do think it's important to touch on a couple things that we have seen over the weekend that will have a lasting impact on life. Today we're going to look at the recent death of Justice Scalia and what that means for pro-life in our country. We're going to look at there is hope from last week, and we're going to look at the theme that was at Hope last week of a support system and why a support system is important. We're going to look at that here in a second. We will then dive into what I believe is hypocrisy between the pro-choicers and some of their other stances, which I think is interesting, and you'll see the connection there as we dive into it. And then we're going to discuss our spring banquet and what that looks like coming up in April for Hope Resource Center. But first, what I want to do is talk about Justice Scalia and the death of a Supreme Court justice that was appointed by Ronald Reagan, one of the best Supreme Court justices to ever serve. And he died over the weekend on a hunting trip. He died in his sleep, and he was 79 years old, I believe. And what does that mean for the pro-life movement? The 2016 election is a very important one because there is potential, even before Justice Scalia's death, there was potential that the next president will appoint around three or four justices to the court. And again, those are lifetime. So they will serve until they either remove themselves or until they take their last breath. So now with Justice Scalia gone, one of the most conservative, one of the greatest, he's gone. So now the fight is in. Will the Senate confirm a appointee by President Obama? Will they wait until the next president takes office? A lot of things to go with, but 2016, regardless, is a very important election, regardless if you're liberal or if you're conservative, progressive or libertarian. It doesn't really matter where you stand. You're going to know that this is a very important election because of the opportunity to appoint Supreme Court justices. And Scalia was a true conservative. He didn't see the Constitution as a living and breathing document. He was an originalist. Now, listen to the definition of an originalist. Now, used to, everybody that served on the court was an originalist. You didn't have to give a definition to it, but in today's time, we have to have a definition to it. And here's what it means. This is a philosophy that a law's meaning doesn't change over time and should be interpreted as a reasonable person, quote-unquote, would understand the text at the time it was passed. Now, what a crazy thought that someone would look at the Constitution and read it and say, this is what the founders meant. There's no need to change this document. This is what it says, and this is what it means. This is what we want and should set the bar for in terms of looking at justices. Dr. Al Mohler, who's the president of Southern Seminary, he wrote an article, a great piece on Scalia, and I want to go through it with you now as we just kind of see what this means with the loss of Scalia, what this means for our country. Presidents come and go, but the Supreme Court goes on forever. So advised the man who ought to know, William Howard Taft. After serving as President of the United States, Taft went on to serve, probably more effectively, as Chief Justice of the United States. But if the Supreme Court goes on forever, justices do not. Americans were reminded of this truth on Saturday when news broke that Justice Scalia had been found dead in Texas, where he had gone on a hunting trip. The 79-year-old justice had served almost 30 years on the nation's highest court and was by any measure one of the most influential justices in that court's history. Indeed, Scalia is almost surely the most influential justice to sit on the Supreme Court in many decades. The loss of his influence, as well as his crucial vote, is monumental. Scalia's significance lies in his commitment to originalism, also known as textualism, the belief that the Constitution of the United States is to be read and understood and applied in keeping with the language, syntax, and vocabulary of its text as understood to be intended by the framers, which is what I was talking about just a little bit ago. This was how the Supreme Court had operated for decades, without even having to express originalism as a method. All that changed in modern decades as the court and the nation's liberal legal culture adopted an understanding of the Constitution as an evolving document that was to be interpreted in light of current social needs. Even if this required the abandonment of the Constitution as a regulative document, progressivists, as they styled themselves, argued that the Constitution is to be interpreted as a living, quote-unquote, text that can be made to mean whatever modern jurists and legal theorists want the text to mean. As Scalia would later explain, judges had grown accustomed to remaking the world in their own image, abandoning constitutional government. This process began earlier than even most conservatives recognize. One of the earliest proponents of this trajectory was President Woodrow Wilson. By the time Scalia arrived at the Harvard Law School in the late 50s, the idea of the living Constitution was established orthodoxy. The moral revolution now reshaping Western societies could not have occurred without a cadre of judges and justices eager to advance that revolution by the assertion of radical ideas of personal liberty, autonomy, identity, and self-expression that the framers of the Constitution would never have recognized. The Constitution was bent and contorted to serve that revolution. New rights, quote-unquote, were invented that had no basis in the text of the Constitution itself. In the 1960s, the Supreme Court invented an individual right to privacy that was used to overturn state laws against birth control. In 1973, the same argument was used by the court's majority in the Roe v. Wade decision legalizing abortion. In 2003, the court struck down laws criminalizing sodomy, and in 2013 and 15, the court issued rulings that eventually legalized same-sex marriage throughout the nation. Even before his nomination to the Supreme Court in 1986, Scalia was known for his brilliant defense of originalism and was often called a strict constructionalist. Reading of the Constitution, though he preferred to call his approach textualism. Put simply, Scalia argued that the American commitment to democratic self-government required that the Constitution be honored as the nation's authoritative text. He firmly believed in the right of the people to establish a constitutional government that would recognize the ultimate authority of the people, not an elite of unelected judges to establish laws. As he often said, his concern was not necessarily what policy the people should adopt through electing representatives who would produce legislation. His concern was who decides. It should be the people through their elected representatives, not an elite of judges. Persuade, this is quoted from Scalia, persuade your fellow citizens, it is good idea to pass a law. That's what democracy is all about. It's not about nine judges who have been there too long imposing these demands on society. In his remarkable and haunting dissent to the 2015 decision legalizing same-sex marriage, Justice Scalia made this point emphatically. This is a naked judicial claim to legislative, indeed super-legislative power, a claim fundamentally at odds with our system of government. He continued, a system of government that makes the people subordinate to a committee of nine unelected lawyers does not deserve to be called a democracy. He was often most eloquent in his dissent and prophetic in his warnings. He warned that the court's 2003 decision in Lawrence v. Texas would mean the end of all morals legislation. Further, today's opinion is the product of a court which is the product of a law profession culture that is largely signed on to the so-called homosexual agenda, by which I mean the agenda promoted by some homosexual activists directed at eliminating the moral opprobrium that has traditionally attached to homosexual conduct. If the people believe that same-sex marriage should be legal, then let them elect legislators who will accomplish that by law, Scalia urged. He advocated the same for abortion and endless other issues. He was a stalwart opposed to judges usurping political authority for themselves. Though he fully understood that the Supreme Court's majority intended to do just that, he also understood that the Constitution operated as a necessary restraint upon political impulses. He said this, a constitution is not meant to facilitate change. It is meant to impede change, to make it difficult to change. And the article goes on and on. Scalia, one of the most pro-life judges this country has ever seen. And I want to point at that by what some of the things he said concerning abortion. He said, you want a right to abortion? There's nothing in the Constitution about that, but that doesn't mean you cannot prohibit it. Scalia made this statement during a 2011 interview with the California Lawyer. He called Roe v. Wade an absurdity, saying the Constitution's 14th Amendment doesn't guarantee equal protection for women in a way that can be construed as allowing abortion on demand. Then he said this, my view is that regardless of whether you think prohibiting abortion is good or whether you think prohibiting abortion is bad, regardless of how you can't come out on that, my only point is the Constitution does not say anything about it. It leaves it up to democratic choice. Some states prohibit it and some states didn't. What Roe v. Wade said was that no state can prohibit it. That is simply not in the Constitution. In a 2012 interview with CNN, Piers Morgan, Scalia pointed out the overreaching effects of Roe, which struck down pro-life laws in dozens of states across the country and opened the doors to abortion for any reason through all 9 months of pregnancy. The High Court justice said states should have the ability to determine their own abortion laws. The death penalty. Give me a break. It's easy. Abortion. Absolutely easy. Nobody ever thought the Constitution prevented restrictions on abortion. And then he said this in 2012, but some of the liberties of the Supreme Court has found to be protected by that word, liberty. Nobody thought constituted a liberty when the 14th Amendment was adopted. Abortion? It was criminal in all states. In his 1989 dissent in the abortion case, Webster versus Reproductive Health Services, Scalia expressed his frustration that the court would not overturn Roe, even though he thought many of the justices believed it was bad case law. Almost two decades later, Scalia's dissenting words hold true. Though the High Court has allowed some protections for unborn life since then by banning partial birth abortion and upholding informed consent laws, pro-lifers continue to work to overturn Roe and restore full protections for unborn babies. He said this, you're allowing 5 of 9 hotshot lawyers to run the country. And the list goes on and on and on. So what we have there is we have a lawyer, we have a judge, we have an amazing man who lost his life, and from all accounts, natural causes is the cause of that losing of life. But as the country as a whole, what we have is we have a Supreme Court now that is lacking, and it's lacking a bold, assertive, intellectual that isn't simply a conservative, but he is one that stands for everything the Constitution is and for everything this democracy is supposed to be. That is what we lost in Judge Scalia. A man that was not scared to talk about his pro-life stance, but also a man that did not believe in legislating from the bench. He was a man that believed the framers put together one of the greatest documents this world had ever seen. One of the greatest ideas this world had ever seen. That is what Justice Scalia believed in. And although he had some strong beliefs on issues, he knew that his role was not to legislate. His role was to look at the laws and see what that meant through the eyes of the Constitution. Not to make laws work, or not to make the Constitution work with laws to push a progressive agenda. That is what we lost in Justice Scalia. An amazing man, and may he rest in peace. We'll be back in a sec to talk more. And we're back. This is Andrew Wood with Hope Resource Center. Glad that you're joining us today from your car, from your home, from the shower, wherever it is that you may be right now. Or maybe you're listening to the podcast. However you are listening to us, we are glad that you're listening. Spent the first segment talking about Justice Scalia because, you know, I really could spend the whole show on him. But I think it's important that we as conservatives, we as pro-lifers, stand and recognize what type of man, not just the Supreme Court lost, but what type of man this country lost on Saturday. So think about that as you think through your pro-life stance. So right now I want to shift gears just a bit and think about what is a support system and what value does it have? And now I want to tell you some stories we saw and how we saw the value firsthand of support system last week at Hope Resource Center. So do you have a support system? Do you have someone that would go to bat for you? Is there someone right now that comes to mind that would do absolutely anything for you? I suspect these questions are quickly answered, and most, if not all, of you have someone in mind. This is true for many of us. We have been blessed with a spouse, a sibling, or a friend that has always been there and will always be there for us. Sadly, many of our patients at Hope do not share this story. Many of our patients have no one that is willing to stand with them in the valleys, but in these times of despair and desperation, we are often surprised that what we know is common is altered, and we become witnesses to something truly amazing as we see a support system rise up to stand with a woman in crisis. This was the theme of Hope last week, as we were blessed to encounter some amazing people willing to stand with their friend when others would not. This started with a walk-in pregnancy test. Many of these walk-ins visit Hope alone. This is typically an illustration of how they view the world, a lonely one. This particular walk-in, however, was different. She had a friend come with her, a friend that chose to love instead of judge, a friend that was willing to place their own life behind that of their loved one. This love was immediately put into action once our nurse revealed a positive pregnancy test. The patient acted somewhat discouraged and in shock, saying, "I cannot do this. I'm not ready for a baby." This discouragement was met with love by a friend as support was given. Support that sounded like this: "We can do this. I am here for you." This was truly a blessing to see, but we still had no idea what decision would be made. Would this friend continue this stance and encouragement once they left the doors of Hope? Would this patient continue to seek counsel from a friend? We had no way of knowing, but we were happy to schedule a follow-up ultrasound, praying this patient would come back. And I'm happy to report that this patient came back for a follow-up, although this visit was a bit different than her last. We were able to witness the support team of one grow to five. It was truly heartwarming to see this group of friends rally around this patient in crisis. They were not there to judge or pick apart. They were there to love and encourage. They were willing to go into the storm with their friend and not wait for the storm to subside. We watched in tears as this group of friends stood in the parking lot, hugging, laughing, and crying over the life they were able to see via an ultrasound. We were blessed to see this type of support twice last week. The second case was different. This time we did not see a patient. Instead, we were blessed to see a friend in tears and in need of help. We had a young lady walk in our doors pleading for her pregnant friend and her intentions of having an abortion. Now think about that. This friend cared enough about her friend that she was willing to walk in our doors asking what she could do. She was willing to go wherever she needed to in hopes that her friend would find the love and care she needed. This young lady cared deeply about life and the unborn child her friend was carrying. Her love, however, did not stop at the womb. It was also very clear that she cared deeply about her friend and her future. I'm so happy this young lady found her way to Hope and to our front desk, where she was met by our staff, a staff willing, able, and ready to do some prayer work when needed. This young lady was heartbroken and at a loss for what to do next. And in this loss, she did what believers should do. She asked for prayer. She requested we include her friend in our prayers as she turned to leave. Our front desk staff said that we would, but then they stopped this young lady and asked if they could pray for her and her friend right then and there. This question was answered with a resounding yes, and prayer time was had in the lobby of Hope. The two stories that I just mentioned are just a glimpse into what happens at Hope on a daily basis. I share them with you so that you can see how important a support system is. Are you that friend that needs to stand when part of your crew is in crisis? Are you that friend that can take needs to the throne when someone is facing a tough time? So many of the patients we see at Hope are without support. They are left to face their deepest valleys alone. This must change if we were ever to see love triumph. I praise God for the friends discussed here today and for those that chose to stand when no one else will. Be that friend today and be willing to go into the storms with those you love. A life just may depend on it. That's what happened last week, and those are encouraging stories. Those are things that we want to share with our supporters, share with people that stand with Hope, but also to share with you to know that you may be that friend for someone. Are you willing to go the extra mile? Are you willing to go into that storm? You know, a lot of times I think as Christians, we look at this as Christians are exempt from the storm. But if you look in the text, you see when Jesus talked about the storm that was coming, and then there was one person that built their house on sand, and when the storm came, the winds blew, and the house was demolished. Why? Because there was no foundation. But the But the house that was built on the rock, it could withhold, it could withstand because it was built on a rock. But the common denominator between both of those is whether you have your foundation built on sand or built on the rock, the storm is coming, right? So neither one of those groups are exempt from the storm. So if you have a friend that is in a storm and going through something tough, maybe they're dealing with an unplanned pregnancy, maybe they're in crisis, are you willing to run toward the storm or away from the storm? Are you willing to go in there with them, be there for them, be the shoulder to cry on, or provide the prayers or provide the encouragement? That's what we saw last week at Hope. We saw a group of girls coming together for a friend. You know, a lot of times I get on here and I talk about strangers standing for strangers. But when will friends stand for friends? So it's one thing that to be a stranger standing for strangers. So at Hope, we do that every day. We're strangers standing for strangers because we don't know the vast majority of the folks that are coming in our doors. But when will friends stand for friends? So that's something that we have to think about as well. If we're going to love the stranger, are we not also to love our friends? And I'm just here to tell you, folks, loving your friend does not look like telling them whatever decision you make in terms of choosing life or an abortion, I will support you. That's not love of a friend. Love of a friend says you can do this and I'm going to help you. I will be here for you. I will do whatever it is I need to do to make this life and this baby and this pregnancy situation work. You know, I was talking with a pastor right before I came here, and the discussion I had with him was the local church standing and doing more for life. And a lot of times when I talk to Christians, they think about the patients that come to Hope and they think, well, man, they're just making really bad decisions and they're making poor sexual decisions and all of this. And what I'm reminded of, I think back to the people that I grew up with. I think back to people that I grew up in church with. So that's really the difference here. These people, our patients at Hope, aren't that much different than you. Some of them just happen to get pregnant. So consequences happen after they have sex. And a lot of times we don't want to talk about that. We act as if, well, because no consequences have happened, because I didn't get pregnant, you can't put me in that boat. And what we need to understand is we all have our struggles. We all have our failures. And so what we need to see, what we need to put in practice is truly standing with our friends when they are in crisis. And what a glorious picture we got to see last week at Hope of these friends standing with their friend in an ultrasound room. And then the friend that just drove to Hope because she didn't know where else to go to plead for prayers for her friend that was pregnant. Now that is a friend I think we all wish we had. One that is willing to do whatever they have to do to stand with you. And so the question is, are you that friend to someone? Have you ever been that friend to someone? And so my prayer is that you're willing to go the extra mile. My prayer is that you're willing to stand and help those that are in need. So it's not just strangers standing for strangers, but it's friends standing for friends. When we come back, we're going to talk get a little political. We're going to talk about NARAL and Planned Parenthood and the Hillary Clinton candidacy. We'll be back in a sec.
I know you've cast my sin as far as the east is from the west, and I stand before you now as though I've never
seen. And we're back. This is Andrew Wood with Hope Resource Center. Glad that you're joining us today. Talked quite a bit today about Judge Scalia, and then spent the last segment talking about a support system and why that is important. And what I want to do now is kind of switch gears. I don't know if y'all are aware of this, but there's an election going on. You might have noticed, 2016 election. We've seen a bunch of debates. It's a very important one. The Republicans had, I don't know, somewhere between 30 and 50 candidates running for office. Now it's down to, I think, 7 or 8. I think Gilmore finally pulled his name out. I think it's down to 6 is what the producer is saying. So either way, we've gone from, I think, 19 is what they started with, to now 6. And so what we have is we really need to whittle that down even more on the Republican side to truly see what we're going to have in the general election. But right now, Donald Trump is leading in all the polls. I'm not going to talk about him. I could spend a long time doing that and not going to do that here. But what I want to do is as we look at that, we saw so many Republicans trying to win the seat. And we have really two serious Democrat candidates. With Hillary Clinton, everyone just assumed, and really a lot like 2008, everyone just assumed Hillary Clinton would be the Democrat candidate. And there's this guy by the name of Barack Obama came in 2008 that changed that, and Hillary's been upset and bitter ever since. And now what you have is you have another really young man at 74 years old, Bernie Sanders, coming in and running for office and is actually doing really well. And so a lot of people are surprised at that, but he's doing really well. He calls himself a Democratic socialist. I would recommend go read the Karl Marx, anything from Karl Marx. If you want to know where Bernie Sanders stands on things, you can read that and kind of see where he comes from. So I would recommend that. But what I want to do is again, I'm not going to endorse any candidate. I'm going to, last week I went after Chris Christie on the Republican side. This week we're going to talk a little bit about Hillary Clinton. And I think it's important. They're always screaming for fair time. So let's give them fair time. So what we're going to do tonight is talk about Hillary Clinton and those that stand with her. That's all I'm going to say, is those that stand with her. So those that have endorsed Hillary Clinton. So we've seen Planned Parenthood come out. For the first time ever, they've come out and endorsed a candidate in a primary, and they've endorsed who? Hillary Clinton. NARAL has also come out and endorsed Hillary Clinton. So what does this mean? Why Hillary Clinton? Why not anyone on the Republican side? Why not Bernie Sanders? Why not O'Malley, who used to be the governor of Maryland? He used to be there, and everybody thought, well, he believes what they believe. He's young, but for whatever reason, he couldn't gain any traction. But they come out and they supported Hillary Clinton. So why? Why her? This means Clinton will, at all costs, fight for abortion. That is why they are supporting Hillary Clinton, because she has said and has been on record as saying that a baby is not a baby until it leaves the hospital. Now they would say that I'm extreme for my views of saying life begins at conception, but no one is willing to look at Hillary and say, aren't you a little extreme about saying that it's not a baby until it leaves the hospital? But this is ultimately why NARAL, and this is ultimately why Planned Parenthood is supporting Hillary Clinton, is because she's going to fight for abortion at all costs. This isn't about women's health, so they're going to say this. Now, you're going to hear this. You're going to read everything from Planned Parenthood and NARAL. You're going to hear a lot about women's health and women's choice and reproductive rights, and they're going to package it all well, and they're going to say, we stand with this woman because she's going to fight for women's health. And they're in that, they're also going to say that men have no business saying anything, but they're going to attack any pro-life candidate and say that they hate women and are against women finding good health. So they're going to say all this, but I'm just here to tell you, this isn't about cancer screenings, birth control, or well women visits. It's not about any of those things. This is about the cash cow, abortion, and abortion on demand. This is also about power. So think about that. We want to, a lot of times we talk about the political elites and we talk about those that that are getting certain privileges. But what I want you to know is when the president of the United States, the man or woman that lives in the White House, is coming out every opportunity they get and they're standing with you on certain cases like Planned Parenthood. They have Hillary standing with them for the last 8 years. They've had President Obama stand with them and speak at their conferences. So if you don't think this is about power, then you're not paying attention. This is absolutely about power. They know that if a pro-lifer gets in the White House, some of their clout, some of their power is going to go by the wayside. So Planned Parenthood has had support in D.C. and the White House for the past 8 years. They do not want to lose that. So this is why they support Hillary. Listen to this clip of Hillary, and this is, again, why Planned Parenthood stands with her.
I don't have all the facts, but Planned Parenthood has apologized for the insensitivity of the employee who was taped, and they will continue to answer questions for the Congress and others. But for more than a century, Planned Parenthood has provided essential services for women, not just reproductive health services, including access to affordable family planning, but cancer screenings, for example, and other health checkups. And I think it is unfortunate that Planned Parenthood has been the object of such a concerted attack for so many years. And it's really an attack against a woman's right to choose to make the most personal, difficult decisions that any woman would face based on her faith and her and the medical advice that she's given. So
okay, I've had enough of that clip. But what the clip started with was Hillary Clinton saying, "Now I don't have all the facts." Now that's where it should have ended. "I don't have all the facts. I'm not going to speak to that. I'll get back to you." But instead, she says, "I don't have all the facts, but let me tell you how wonderful this organization is." So what she does from there is she jumps to, you heard it, cancer screenings, well women visits, women's right to choose. So what that means, all that is wrapped up in the veil of abortion. That is ultimately what they're getting at, is you cannot take our rights, you cannot restrict our right to abortion. And that's why I wanted to point out at the beginning of the show, Justice Scalia saying there is no right. It isn't in the Constitution. The way it's set up is for states to decide if there should be restrictions or not. There is no constitutional right to abortion. But because some judges back in the day decided to legislate from the bench, that is what we are left with. So you heard that. So, of course, Planned Parenthood is going to come out and support them. Look what NARAL had to say. They said, "Today I am thrilled to announce that the NARAL Pro-Choice America PAC has voted to endorse Hillary Clinton for president. Hillary has what it takes to fight Republican attacks on women's reproductive rights." Hear that, women's reproductive rights. "And has the vision and experience to ensure women and families thrive." I think it's funny, they keep talking about families, but their goal here is to determine what size that family is, or to determine whether that single individual becomes a family or not. "The stakes this election could not be higher." Now that is one place me and NARAL will agree. The stakes for this election could not be higher. "Combating anti-choice rhetoric from the GOP, the opportunity to appoint a Supreme Court justice in the next term who could preserve our rights and freedoms, and the ability to influence a myriad of state and federal laws that impose extreme ideology on Americans. Personal decisions about when and how to grow our family." So listen to that. Extreme ideology from Americans. So that what that means is extreme pro-lifers who believe life begins at conception and who believes that life has value. So they can try all they want to wrap this in women's health, but their focus is clear. And Planned Parenthood is the same way. So their focus is clear. NARAL, don't forget, is the same organization that came out during the Super Bowl and complained about Doritos humanizing the fetus. So again, their focus is clear. It isn't about cancer screenings. It isn't about women's health. It is about the ability to continue to provide abortions. They act concerned about Black Lives Matter or voter fraud, but their stance on abortion doesn't support this. Listen to this recent Planned Parenthood, their faux outrage on voter ID. So listen to this. The 2016 presidential election will be historic. It'll be the first presidential election since 1965 in which all Americans won't be fully protected from voting discrimination. That's why voters who care about democracy need your help. So this is all from Planned Parenthood. And they're going after the Voting Rights Act of 1965 by allowing states with a long history of voter suppression and race-based discrimination to change their voting laws without clearing them through the Department of Justice. So again, they're calling out here is the ability of certain states to require an ID to vote. That is what they're upset about. So Planned Parenthood stands with every progressive agenda that comes along, and they get involved heavily in the political scene. And what I want to point out, if they want to talk about voter suppression, let's talk about voter suppression. Since Roe v. Wade, 56 million people have been suppressed from voting. Now, does that bother anyone else? And I'm here to say that that's 56 million. That could be half Democrats, half Republicans, some Libertarians, some Independents. There may be some Ralph Nader votes in there. There's going to be a lot of different types of votes. But what they don't want to talk about is suppressing that vote. They don't want to talk about oppressing the unborn since Planned Parenthood's conception. They don't want to talk about oppressing African-American and minority families since their conception 100 years ago. So if we want to talk about voters' rights, I'm willing to have that conversation, but let's put all the cards on the table and let's talk about what that really means. Because 100% of those that have been aborted since Roe v. Wade have not been allowed to vote. Whether they showed an ID or not, they were not allowed because they weren't allowed to live. So to me, that is voter suppression, if we want to talk about it. But of course, I'm, you know, a right-wing nut job that believes life is sacred. And hear me when I say this. Even if all 56 million of the aborted babies since Roe v. Wade came out and were progressive or were Democrat, I'm still sitting here today saying they have the right to live and they have the right to vote. So I don't want you to get that messed up or not hear me right. I'm not saying that only the conservative babies should have had that right. I'm saying all of them should have been given that right and opportunity. So I think it's important as we talk about these things and as we look at truly what is on the table, and we hear from organizations that say they're nonprofit, and we hear from organizations that are charging and making a lot of money off of abortion. And then when we look at presidential candidates, I think it's very important that we look at who is endorsing them. Because who is endorsing them will tell you where they stand on the issues that matter. So look and see who endorses who, and that'll tell you where they stand on life. And I think it's important that we know where people stand on life. When we come back, we're going to talk about the spring banquet that's coming up. It's going to be fun. We'll be back. And we're back. This is Andrew Wood, Hope Resource Center Executive Director. It's been a great show. What we've done today is talked about a number of different things, but I think it's important that we look at that from a pro-life perspective, and what does that mean? So we talked about Justice Scalia and the impact that that's going to have on our country with him, with his untimely death, and a support system, and why is that so important for strangers, not only to stand for strangers, but for friends to stand for friends. And then we looked at, as you look at candidates, what does it mean to look at who's endorsing them? Because that tells you where they stand on the issues of life, and that's one that we need to be looking at. What I wanted to do as we end the show, I want to talk about over the next few months, we will have an opportunity to elect a pro-life candidate. So hear that. Look at all the candidates, and we are going to have an opportunity to elect a pro-life candidate. We've gone the last 8 years without a pro-life candidate in the White House. This is big, but it should not take all of our focus. We must also be prepared to make a change. What will we do to see life celebrated? What will we do to be that support system for a stranger or a friend? Are you prepared to stand? We may lose this election, but that is not the end. Now hear that. We may lose this election, but that doesn't mean the pro-life work is over. We should be standing for life no matter what. So remember that principles matter. So principles matter. We want to stand for our principles. We want to stand for those things over politics. Pro-life issue is not a political issue. Now, do we get into politics with it? Of course. But it is not a political issue by itself. It is one that that is who we are. It's our identity. We stand for life because life has value. So because of that, that's what we're coming up April 28th, we are going to have a banquet at Hope Resource Center. This is a fundraising banquet that we have every single year, and we are doing it, and the theme this year is A Life Worth Saving. That is what we're calling it, A Life Worth Saving. And in years past, you've heard from different speakers, and we've gone really big. What I wanted to do this year is kind of scale it back. We're having it at the Foundry on the Fair site on April 28th, and I wanted to scale it back, and I wanted to bring in a former patient of ours. You know, I'm talking about you can choose life and your dreams. It doesn't have to be one or the other. You can choose life and your dreams. So what I wanted to do this year at the banquet is to showcase that. So the way we're going to showcase that is we're bringing back a former patient who came to Hope roughly 8 years ago as an undergrad at the University of Tennessee. She found herself pregnant. Boyfriend decided to ditch after that. So she's alone. She's facing an unplanned pregnancy. She's in school, trying to finish college. She has goals. She has dreams. She has aspirations. And now she has a pregnancy. So she comes to Hope. She's mentored by Lou Ann. She's loved well. She's served well. She chooses life. And then now fast forward, and just, I don't know, maybe 5 months ago, we get a call from her mom. And she wanted to speak to Lou Ann. And all she said to Lou Ann was, "I just wanted to thank you. I wanted to thank you for what you did for my daughter. I wanted to thank Hope for standing when no one else would and giving my daughter comfort and loving my daughter and serving my daughter." And then she said this. She said, "I wanted you to know that my daughter not only finished undergrad with a baby, but she went on to law school, and she finished law school, and now she's assistant DA in a large city. And all this mom wanted to do was thank Lou Ann and thank Hope for standing when no one else would." So the important thing to recognize there is this patient chose life and her dreams. It wasn't one or the other. But also important with that is she had a support system. She had a family that was willing and eager to stand with her. And she didn't have to do this alone. And she was able to accomplish so much because she had love, she had assistance, and she had a support system. She had strangers standing with her, and she had family standing with her. And she's going to come April 28th, and she's going to share her story. And I hope that you'll join us. You can sign up. You can learn more about it on our website, investinghope.com. You can find it on Facebook. We have different links that we're posting periodically through there as well. Come and join us April 28th, Foundry on the Fair site, and hear from a former patient as she shares her story of hope. And it is a good one. Hope you join us. Hope you continue to listen to us. You can find this on our podcast as well. If you want to share it with your friends, it's on iTunes and our website, investinghope.com. Thanks as always for listening. We'll be back next week. Lift your head, we'll be centered. The river's just ahead. Down the path of forgiveness, salvation's